Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, contractors, villagers, cauldron connoisseurs, and pigs. My name is Jared, and with me, the general of the big bad wolf army himself, Ian.
That's me!
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you've joined us here at our table. Today, we'll be looking at castle razors, designed by Erwin Le Minot, there's no way that's right, and Anthony Perrone. Artwork created by Zinko Kang and Yuan Momoko, and published by Wonderful World Board Games, also known as WWBG. I apologize for any name butchering that just took place.
Castle Razors is a game where players take on the role of the three little pigs. But now, we're grown up.
Yay.
And strong.
Nice.
And we've built a whole village all for ourselves. But Jared.
Nope.
The wolf has also grown up.
Oh, no.
I know, right? He or she now has an entire army of wolves, a pack of wolves, a raging pack of wolves. Players will be building up their castles to defend against this pack of wolves. And the funny thing is we're still using the materials from the OG to build these castles.
What else would we use?
Well, in this game, Jared, we're going to use tiles, and players will use tiles to score points based on the strength of their castle.
Mm.
The winner is the player who doesn't get eaten, one, but then the player that scores the most points at the end of the game will be crowned the greatest of the, not no longer the three little pigs, but
the three adult pigs.
The three adult pigs slash village that is now there.
Yeah.
Let's review Castle Razors.
Incredible. It's not even like the three adult pigs, because sometimes there's four players and therefore...
Right. So how do we split
it's
that?
It's a loose interpretation. All right. It's just an overlay.
We have to use our imagination a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, when you grow up, multiplication usually does happen around you. So it makes sense.
Multiplication. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Ian, I have a question for you.
No. Okay.
Do you have a favorite folktale?
Folktale?
That's the type of story that the Three Little Pigs is.
Man. Like, we're probably doing more like cartoony fun, not like, you know,
Ian has no idea.
King Arthur or something like that. I mean,
you can do it, buddy.
What? Oh, like what?
Well, let me give you some examples.
Okay.
I'll go first. You know
you
what?
Go first.
Thanks, Ian, for letting
me go first.
I'm
really just stalling. I don't know.
No clue.
I don't know if I have a favorite, but go ahead.
I was always a fan of The Ugly Duckling. I thought that was always really good. But also a big fan of The Tortoise and the Hare. Always need to be reminded that we don't have to rush through life. Sometimes it's okay to go slow and steady and just appreciate where we're at along the way. Those are folk tales.
They teach us lessons.
There's no cartoons involved. Just because Disney got a hold of all these things and like
No. I'm not saying cartoony. I'm sorry. I was the wrong. Like more childish tales. Not.
It is. Yes. There's usually like talking animals and things like that going on.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, like, yeah, favorite probably. I mean, honestly, like, yeah, like the Three Little Pigs. But I don't know if I like true. I'm like kind of. It's kind of like a. I'm very much just picking that as the only. I mean,
how do you feel about Hansel and Gretel?
Not a fan. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the only other one, maybe like the Little Red Riding Hood.
There's that one.
But that's it. Yeah, I think
Goldilocks.
Those are the two.
Goldilocks is the dumbest folktale, in my opinion.
Yeah, like not a fan.
She's just such a little brat.
I don't know if I like. Yeah, I don't know. Like the Tortoise and the Hare is good. I mean, the ones that we mentioned are, like, honestly the top five, and they might be the only five.
No,
so,
that's not true.
No, it's I know it's not true, but as far as, like, me,
oh my, listeners,
the ones I enjoyed,
please send in your submissions for folktale things that you like, because Ian needs an education.
I'm aware of the other ones. I just don't like them. I mean, just in general. It's not
what
something
about,
I'm like.
All right, here's another one that's
Jared,
good.
I don't have kids. I'm not reading them every night
well,
to bed
I was
as
say,
I sleep, fall
I've already,
asleep.
I have one that I've been telling to the kids a lot.
Which one is that?
It's The Boy Who Cried Wolf.
The
so
Boy Who Cried
Wolf. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. So, anyway.
Okay, well, this question was a dud. Let's move on.
Yeah, way to go. Way to just, yeah. Anyway, I like The Three Little Pigs. So that was
I'm
one
glad.
Of my, that was one of the, probably the one of the main ones I ever was told and learned the story. And then it still remains one that I know and, you know, so. When I found out about the theme of this game, I was highly intrigued
okay.
based off of that theme.
Because
I thought
of
it was
your
cute.
Love for The Three Little Pigs.
Absolutely, because my love is like a 5 out of 10. But
wow.
I would say overall, the story intrigues me, so I am excited that they brought like when you're talking about games, like obviously there's so many themes.
Yeah,
you can make up somebody could have made something up that just didn't relate to anybody, but the fact that you are bringing in this kind of child story tale mm-hmm. to it all that you definitely, you know, you might be reading to your kids, but if you don't have any kids, then you won't, you know, you haven't gotten to that point in your life yet, like myself, then this is an opportunity to kind of go a flashback to the past and learn a little bit about, you know, what happened to those childhood stories that we loved.
Glad we got the sequel all these years later.
Yeah, this is the sequel. So like, it's exciting.
I agree. I mean, I'm poking fun at you, but I as soon as I was pitched that the one wolf has like now developed an army to come take over these villages, I was like, you got me hooked. Like, let's
yeah.
play.
No, so, that's exactly.
Yep. All right. So let's talk about how to play this game. Ian, how's that sound? And then we'll discuss
good.
It a little bit. All right. Very good.
I'm good with that.
You're good with that?
Tell me about The Three Little Pigs.
Okay. I'll do it. So the goal of this game is to have the most points at the end of the game. This game plays 1 to 4 players, and most of that is in one of two modes, unless you're one player, and then you play solo, the thing that you always, the mode you always play when you play by yourself.
That's how I do it.
Yep. But in a 2 to 4 player game, there is a competitive and a cooperative mode. We will start with the competitive mode first, because I think that is one of the ways that That's a stupid statement. Of course, it's one of the ways that this game is intended to be played.
It's one of the ways.
One of the ways. We're doing great. All right. This game is played over 3 ages, and each age consists of 4 rounds. In each round, the player will draft wall tiles. They'll get 1 wall tile that they'll place into their castle. And by placing this into their castle, they are going to activate 1 of 5 abilities. Sometimes multiple once you start building up your wall. It depends, though, on what icons you're covering when you place your new wall tile. The various abilities are that you can settle villagers. This is allowing you to add more villagers into your castle, which we'll come back to in a minute. You can establish prestige, which lets you take over the mama pig, which represents the first player token. And you also collect prestige tokens in the section that you were able to collect it. I'll go ahead and talk about that now. Your board, everybody's board is mostly the same in that it is divided up into 3 sections. You have the forest to the north, you have the plains off to your west, and then you have the water off to the east. And you have to manage each of these 3 sections in a balance because this is a tower defense game. If you focus all of your attention on your forest and then your water has 1,000 wolves coming in, you will lose. So you do want to make sure that you are balancing out. And there are also certain score modifiers that only trigger for a particular section. So that is why when you are collecting things like prestige, they need to go into the section that you've activated. Next up is fortifying the walls. So like we talked about, you're only getting a certain number of walls each age by collecting them each round. But there's a way to add additional walls, which is done through collecting these extra walls here. They work a little differently than your primary walls do because they don't have any icons on them. They do have the ability to see what's below them, keeping that particular icon available for you to cover later on with a more traditional wall tile. Next up is dispatching wolves. Remember, this is a competitive game, so we want everybody else's towers to be overrun. You are dispatching other wolf tokens to the other boards, and that will be determined by drawing one of your... you'll draw a random attack token. You will add it to the region where you triggered, just like you would a prestige. And then you will reveal which region those wolves are being added to. And then every other player at the table takes wolves, hates you immensely, and then puts them in that particular region. Last but not least is defending the castle. This is where you fight back during the game. The wolves are not going to actually invade the castle until the very end of the game, and you have the opportunity to manage the wolves that are surrounding your castle before they actually make their way inside. So if you have cauldrons available and exposed, you can cover those up to deal damage to the wolves in that particular section. Now, there's a couple things to keep in mind as we trigger these various abilities by covering them up. One, their power is based on the amount of matching icons in that section. So if I have a ton of prestige in my forest and I cover one up, then I'm going to get a lot of prestige tokens for that. Whereas if I cover up a cauldron in one of my sections that doesn't have any other cauldrons, I'm not going to do much damage. So you're trying to figure out a way to trigger your abilities when you have the ability to trigger more than one of them. But that goes back to the delicate balance of figuring out where am I placing these, because I can't just put them all in one section.
Yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind is that, like we talked about earlier, scoring is based on individual sections. And that becomes very important with your villagers, because your villagers, like we talked about at the beginning, are added into your castle and they do two things. One, they're going to add a icon of one of these various abilities that we just talked about, strengthening that particular ability. And then they are going to have an endgame scoring. Their endgame scoring is only for that particular section. But there are villager sections that are on the border, and they can be triggered for both sections. And so it's very important which ones that you decide to place there, because they could end up being major point values. So that's your various abilities. You're trying to build up as high as you can. And then at the end of each age, you're going to do a couple different things. Your exposed cauldrons are going to deal additional damage, and you are going to start taking negative points if you have a certain type of wolf in that section. So if I'm in my forest and I'm reviewing it, I might have an archer wolf. If I do, then I'm going to take an arrow for each archer wolf that's still alive after the cauldron pouring in that section. And then I'll check all three sections and do the same thing. Arrows are worth negative points at the end of the game. And then in the same way, we'll start the next age. It'll be a little bit stronger because we've gone from straw to wood. And then in age three, we're going to go from wood to stone. When we get to the end of the third age and we finish up our normal end of age stuff, then we see how well we have built our castle and if wolves are going to invade. These wolves, there's four different types. The archers, which we've already talked about. There's just regular Joe swordsmen. They're just trying to make a living. I understand what they're doing. They're there, but you know, they're not special, and that's okay. Some of us have to be regular soldiers. Then there's the Mr. Swole guys, as we like to refer to them. They require two damage to be defeated instead of just one. And then the last one, possibly the most devastating wolf to have in your lineup, is our ladder wolves. These wolves just decide to ignore your castle completely and will bring all of their buddies into that section inside your castle. Normally, only the excess amount of wolves would get in. And the way that's determined is if I have my, let's say I'm in my forest again, the lowest section of my wall in my forest section is 5 high. If I have 6 wolves, one wolf is going to get in because that's one higher than my castle wall. If there's 5, none of them get in unless they have a ladder wolf. Then they're all going to get in because that guy cheats and it sucks. If you have the most wolves that get in at the end of the game in that particular section, you get minus 10 points. And again, you're going to check this for all 3 sections. Second most gets minus 5. Everybody else gets 0. Then you'll tally up your points for a variety of different ways. Whoever has the most points wins. There's only a couple different modifications in a cooperative game. You still have your own board. You're still building up your own castle just like everybody else is. But a couple of the differences is that you're able to see kind of your lineup of wolves that are going to be coming in at the end of the age, and there's ways to manage that. And then the other thing about cooperative is you're working together, so there's a little bit more ability to kind of stack your points a little bit more. But to kind of balance that a little bit, everybody gets a, I believe they're called threat cards. These threat cards are either going to keep you from being able to do something. For example, I had one. I couldn't kill any archer wolves. They just got to hang out forever. It was really annoying.
Yeah.
And they'll have ones like that. Or they'll have a extra win condition that you have to complete or the entire team loses. And then if all that was not enough, your team has to score above a certain point threshold combined, or you also lose. That's basically the differences in cooperative versus competitive. I'm sure I've missed a couple minor details, but we just want to give an overview. So that's the general thought there. So more or less, that is how you play. Ian and I will now discuss.
Yeah, I mean...
Jeez. Dude, I don't know that I've ever gone into a overview of how to play and felt more confident that I could do it and then stumbled through it. Like, I was so sure I had that.
There's a lot in this game for how simple and easy, like, it's not overly complicated.
No.
There's just a lot going on at once. A lot of things to look at. And, you know, obviously we missed some rules, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. And
it is an overview after all. So
yeah,
it's all right.
Yeah. So I think overall, like, the rules, I think the rule book is, I think, solid. I'm not blaming the rule book. I think there's just a lot of interactions. There's a lot of buildings, the village tiles that you're looking at and looking at the combos, and then each individual wolf is a little different. And so, like, there's a lot to kind of, and then you have like a stack of wolves. It just depends. Like, it depends on what you're looking at and how that all affects everything. Overall, like, it's not that complicated, but there's just so much happening at once.
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, it is a medium light game. Like, it's not that heavy. Many gamers have thrown it in the family weight category, which I think once you get into it, it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, I don't want the complication of not being able to see it too much, like, throw that off when describing it.
I think
that it's very accessible. We've seen both with new gamers and also with kids that it's picked up pretty easily once you get into it. But there is a good amount of think too.
There's a thing you can play this without that. You could just willy-nilly and score fine. But I think if you want to score well, there's some thought that you want to go into. And I think, yeah, all those little rules, it's just like learning them and just understanding how the interactions work. But it's not anything like too crazy. You might miss something in the first game or two just because there's a lot happening and you might not, you know, it is what it is, but it's good. I think overall, it's not overly complicated. There's a lot of interactions. It's not each individual thing is fine, but then the interactions between, okay, well, what if you have this guy and this wolf and this wolf and then, you know, this building combining with this building and like, what are the combos here, you know? So
yeah. And I think the iconography is really good too, because you can really pick up quickly what's going on there.
Absolutely.
I'll jump back to the rule book for just a second. So the rule book is good and bad. I think the rule book is laid out well and it's easy to find what you're looking for, but I do think, and I talked to Phil, who works at WWBG, great guy. I've had a few conversations with him. But he did mention that they're working on a second edition rulebook that is cleaned up, because there are some typos. There are things that are a little bit confusing as far as what came over in translation. But I think that the bones are there for sure. So if you get a copy that the rulebook has some of those things, just your common sense thought process is correct when you're trying to figure it out.
Right.
So it's not too bad, but it's not perfect either. So But regardless, it's very interesting. Teaching this game, you're like, all right, let's just go through this a little bit at a time. Once you like get the main board explained, like how the covering of the icons works, how it doesn't have to match the new icons that you're bringing down and things, because people like, it's interesting, right? Like players will overcomplicate something that doesn't need to be there. I'm like, no, it's okay. It can be whatever you want. But like once they get past the main castle mechanic, everything else just makes sense.
Yeah.
And it just kind of falls in place.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, overall, I think, like I said before, it's not, we're not talking about anything crazy here. So I think I didn't find it hard to learn at all, like especially basic stuff. So it's some of the other challenging things that can be.
I was going to say, though, like it has a lot of think in it. I definitely had I don't know that we've played a game yet where there wasn't a point late game where I've got my head in my hands, like just staring at the board at all my different options.
For sure.
Because there's lots of different ways to play as far as your strategy goes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that's true.
But, so. Okay.
All right. Well, what do you like, Jared? Tell us what you like.
You know what, man? I'm going to start here. I love a good tower defense game. Like I'll let you take the art and kind of jump on that. For me, having a good tower defense game on a tabletop is very exciting, especially a competitive one where your interaction is not like it's there. Obviously, like you're throwing wolves at each other, you're taking tiles that each other wants, but you're building your castle and there's only so much that everybody else at the table can do about that. But they obviously can affect you by just sending you swarms of wolves. And you're just like,
absolutely.
Guys, y'all are just being jerks. Like, absolutely. But no, I definitely love that it's a tower defense and it's done well. It's done in such a way where it's fun to build the castle up. It's fun to try to decide, okay, I've got to, and we didn't talk about this in the overview, but when you're laying tiles, it's built in such a way where you're always having to build on top of two tiles. So you can't just go straight up and just, you know, take advantage of that. And there's also the aspect of, you know, the way that your icons end up falling as you start building your castle.
Yeah.
You take it because you need probably one of them. The other one, you're like, well, how am I going to use this? And I think there's a lot of creativity amongst the five different symbols. So off the bat, that's my first thing. I'm going to throw in a quick little, I imagine they realized this, but a quick little thing that we picked up on in game one that was so cool. So the cardboard's super thick, right?
Oh my gosh.
For the wolf tokens,
like quadruple
for
size
the tiles,
normal.
It's super thick. But the cool thing that they did is that the wolf tokens are the same thickness as the wall tiles. So you can stack your wolves to kind of keep up with how close are they to getting over my wall.
Yeah, you can.
And I thought that was such a fun little feature for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a neat feature that they added. I mean, obviously it makes it easy because you're like, well, let's just print everything on the same cardstock or cardboard, you know, so the same thickness. But no, that was a good design. The art in this game is, I think, superb. It's not like incredibly detailed because you are playing tiles and the tiles have the straw, you know, and then the stone, and it has the different like materials on it as like a general pattern, but it's not like it doesn't have anything other than the icon and then what age you're in, basically. And so with each individual one, then, you know, that's all it's on there. That's what I'm trying to get to. But your player board with the wolves that you have surrounding, I think the wolves are kind of cool. You know, you have the different types of wolves and it's very clear. They also have colors on them. The arrow or the bow wolves are have red, where the other ones have like their the icons on them. You were very clear in the art on them. You're very clear on which wolf is which. On top of that, the player board in front of you where you are building those tiles has like a little village on it, and it has like beautiful art, you know, like the forest area and the grasslands and the water. I mean, it's basic in a way. It doesn't have anything like overly crazy on it, but it's just, it's really pretty. It's bright colors. It's cartoony. So overall, like the artwork just makes the game thrive, in my opinion. It's not a hindrance. It keeps everything moving, but it's also just pretty to look at. Like you're sitting in your castle and it's like pretty to like look at. And so even when you buy like those little village tiles, so that's a positive. I love that so much. And then on top of that, obviously you mentioned tile laying, but like you said, you can't play right on top of each other. You have to offset and you have to build. I mean, technically you could still build like one half of your castle like up and leave the other side, but it's more beneficial to build around because that's where you are getting those other icons and you're trying to trigger all of these different icons. But the main thing I love about this game, just period, like this is the number one, is building the combos of the different icons. And so as you're drafting one, it like has so many different aspects and I don't want to give into each one, but like I like drafting as well. The player interaction, like it's actually there. It actually exists, which is never happens in a tile laying game, in my opinion. So to have it in this game is awesome. And then I obviously building up a three-dimensional piece, always perfect. But the combinations and the combos that you can trigger via the drafting, you can just sink all into one type of resource or whatever. Like yes, Jared, I'm the jerk this scenario. I get the wolf attacks and I spread the wolves to every other player in the game. I've done that in the multiple games that I've played. I haven't lost this game. So whatever that means, maybe because I'm just being a jerk. So there's that. But regardless, I think there's viable strategies in all different ways. But my personal favorite to play is just sending the wolves out to everybody. I think it's so fun. And it's a viable way to score points. Everybody hates you, but also you score points. And so I think it's a lot of fun where you are building your points, like you're building up your castle, but then you're just triggering a different symbol than what most of the other players are triggering. And like I said, personally, I like the ones that you send the wolves out to everybody else. I think that's really neat that interaction is there. So with all of those different aspects, though, I mean, I love all of them, and I think this is a really solid game, but I think those are some of my favorite, like, attributes of what's going on. Because there's, like we talked about, there's kind of a lot going on, like, just a lot of different mechanisms. Again, don't be scared by this game. I promise you, it's easy to get into. Like, you draft a tile and you play it. Like, but I think there is so much, there is a level of depth. Like, to walk in and play, easy. To get really great at the game, there's a whole other level. There is a lot of depth here that you just have a whole, you know, curve that you can hop onto and get better and better at this game, though.
I think for me, one of the abilities that I'm like learning to want, I'm wanting to really get good at is the wall fortification. Because when you can take these extra walls and figure out the right way to build them up, where you're saving that icon that you really want to use later on, it can be very powerful, I think, and it also is adding to your defense as well. But I think there's a certain art to creating that. And I do like too, like we had one player that we played with a couple nights ago, and they're the newer gamer, and it's easy to just be like, go for cauldrons. Cauldrons is easy. It's straightforward. You're killing wolves to keep them off your walls. Like, go for that. It's an easy strategy to go for, and it works for a while, but you're not claiming any points. You're just keeping points from getting in and
being taken away from you.
So it's a trade-off, and so it's interesting. And you're right, you have not lost when we played. Nobody likes you at the end, but
Oh boy.
It's all good. And that is something to think about. Like, if you're someone who is just completely against any kind of animosity or any kind of like take that in games, there is that in this game. It's there because there you want other players to take wolves so that you can score better. And they're focused on trying to clean that up in their own board. So that is that. There's no way around it. Like, that's part of the game. So just something to think about as you're going through this.
Yeah, I think this, like I said, this is a high player interaction game than comparative other tile laying games that I've played. And a player interaction may more like player attacking. There's always a little bit of player interaction, but I do think you're like actually attacking the other players in a way.
But you're also still giving them the freedom to build their castle how they want to, which is what I was talking about with that subtlety of like, yes, there's a lot of interaction, but they can choose to deal with that however they want to.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think because players, you know, you get to draft, you get to take tiles like from other players. You're like, oh, I don't want you to get that tile, so I'm going to take it. That's in any tile laying game. You know, you're taking from the, you know, making sure another player doesn't get a tile. But I think the aspect that you are actually able to, you know, inhibit what the other players are doing and kind of give them a challenge mid game is here. And that doesn't always happen in that. And so I think it's a perfectly balanced aspect of the game. I don't find it. I mean, yes, it's annoying, but
you could also just shrug and say, fine, yeah. Ian, keep taking it. I'm not going to worry about it. I'll take the minus points.
Exactly.
And build up my score somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So
I think a couple other things that I like is with the different modes, they build off of each other, but they also have their own distinguishing aspects. Mm. So even in the two-player game, if I'm player one, I will take a tile, and then I will discard a tile. And so you only have two options as player two to pick from. And the tile that you and I both slough, if either one of those has a wolf token on it, then the other player also gets wolves. So there's this added, like, I can do multiple things in a two-player game that I can't do in any of the other modes. And then I also just love the, like, casualness of the cooperative game in this one. Like, it's not super deep. Everybody can work together. So it feels very collaborative, but you're still building your own castle. So it's, you could alpha it, but I feel like you'd really be trying to alpha
it. I think this is like one of those few instances I don't think you can.
Really have to be trying to do it.
Like, I just don't. This is like, this game is forcing you, forcing the cooperative aspect of this game not to do that. I would find it hard to play this. Like, if you're straight up, I guess, playing with all new people, you could be like, yeah, you should do this. But this is just so different because you are trying to score your own points. Everybody has their own castle that they kind of have to worry about. And so, you are talking, like, we're communicating in a cooperative game, you know, on, okay, what, like, should we take these wolves out? But you're still trying to score your most points. And I can't tell you every player in the game how to do that. Like, they got to score their own points and figure it out.
I agree.
So I think that's awesome. That's a good, collaborative experience, great. But you're not going to top dog and listen to me. That's just not going to happen here. Or top wolf.
No,
you're not going to wolf it. Wolf pack.
Ha-ha. It was already there. Alpha is like the head of the pack, Ian. It was right there for you.
Well, it's already okay. Used it, so I was going somewhere else.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. Well, no, but the other thing about cooperative is it has that ability to adjust difficulty. So you can, if I'm playing with kids, I don't have to give them a threat card. If I'm playing with all adults, like we've done, we've taken two threat cards. And
I think if you played the game before, personally, I think taking two is required. I think it's a little easier.
I agree.
I don't consider this like an incredibly difficult cooperative game.
No, it's very casual.
It's very casual. But, as the game is in general, but
if you do have multiple threat cards, at least in the beginning, you're like, I don't know how we're gonna make this work.
Yeah, I guess like there's a world where if somebody drew the wrong wolves at the wrong time, like you could sink the team. So
even though
I can't attack other people's wolves. They have to deal with the problem themselves.
That's right.
So
yeah. And one guy did have like a whole army coming from the water that there was just nothing that could happen. You know,
we're just
like
standing here waiting, hoping that he doesn't get overran.
Yep. But yeah, I don't know. That's the other thing you can adjust to is like the amount of communication. Like the game gives you that freedom.
Yeah.
So
that's true. That's true.
You could choose to make that part. Like there's a lot of ability to adjust, which I like. So even though we took two, we did have like open communication. So I think if we didn't have that, that would make it even harder. So lots of room for flexibility and replayability.
That's true. No, I didn't think about that. That's true. Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of flexibility. I do think with experienced players, you're still going to do the dual. I think it's more fun to do the dual wielding of bad cards. But anyway,
I get it. I think I'm totally on board with you that at first I was nervous about taking two, but by mid game, I was like, yeah, this was the right call for sure.
That's right.
So I'm trying to think what else, because I feel like there's a couple other things. Oh, yeah. The villagers. The villagers are a really cool aspect as well, because you get a villager to start with. And then I think there's like so you can have up to four villagers in each section. But then three of those are being shared between two sections, if you think about it. Right. So there's because that math checks.
So there's like 12 slots. 10?
Yeah. Total. Something like that.
Somewhere around there.
Sure.
I think it's 12.
I think you're right. I know what I said is right, but I can't remember. This is great audio.
I think it's 12.
I think you're
right. We're going to say it.
We're going to go with it. Anyways.
As my memory serves me right, I think it's 12.
The very interesting thing is that that villager only scores for that section.
Yeah.
So it adds a layer of one, I now have this extra icon, so I want to focus that icon in this section, but I also need it elsewhere. Like, for example, the cauldrons. You want the cauldrons everywhere, but you also want to take advantage of that. And there's this end game scoring for this particular section, so you're trying to focus. So learning where to place the villagers, when to get extra villagers, when to grab whatever, like it, that adds an extra layer that I really enjoy. And sometimes, like there was one game where I had a villager already that gave me 4 points for each empty space in that section where there was no other villagers. And I was like, I don't even want to cover up this villager spot, but I don't have a choice. Like I have to.
Yeah.
And so I didn't technically have to, but for what I was doing, I needed to. And so it created this like tension of what do I do here, and learning how to navigate around the obstacles. So I really like that. That actually shows up a few different ways. Like, there were multiple times where I was like, I don't want to give Ian more wolves to disperse on me, but I also want this other tile way more than I want that one. And so there is definitely a lot of like, what do I take here?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's the decision making is great. And that's what I love about tile laying stuff like this. You just have so many different combinations and so many ways to play. Like, I've been heavy like wolves in many of my games. I think there's an opportunity for me to do something different on a different game, and I think I'll have fun doing that. And so trying a different strategy. I do the wolves mainly because nobody wanted to take them, so I was like, well, fine, nobody wants them, I'll just send the packs roaring.
We're too busy trying to build stuff, man, and kill wolves and like
raging wolves stuff.
That's right.
Maybe they have rabies, so that's why I was sending them the rabid wolf.
It's very kind of you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It felt good from my side. But I do think every game strat honestly has a way to score, and it's kind of its own way. Like, I realized that, so like if you are sending the wolves a lot, you honestly end up taking a lot of more negative points because you're not cauldroning, you're removing any of the wolves that are in front of you, because people are still going to send wolves on you. That's just going to happen.
And you've got no protection.
And you have no protection because you've been, you know, just sending packs.
You're right. Nope, you were about to say it. That was the right thing to say.
rabid packs. But anyway, I think it's, so I realized that I was taking a lot of negative points, but I do think in like every game, if I just did like points scored, I scored so many points because you get so many, and then I would get multipliers with the different villager tiles. So I scored a bunch of points, but I also had a lot of negative points. And so the games were also always close. Where I noticed, like, you a couple different strategies you tried. You didn't have like a ton of negative points, but you know, it was still a close game, but you didn't score as many points total. So I think it's really interesting the different game like mechanics there of, and I think that's just a causation of doing a specific, you know.
Well, I think it's one of those things too where you've got to learn to get outside of your own castle a little bit, where there's certain times where I've just got to decide that I'm going to take the dispersing wolves to Icon so that you can't have it, or I'm going to take a particular villager so that you can't continue to stack your points. You know, like it's one thing for them to be worth 3 points per attack token, but when they get up to 5 or 6, then yeah, it doesn't matter that you got wolves coming in because your points have already stacked up.
So. Yeah. I think you mentioned the villager tiles. They are so cool. One, because they have an in-game scoring. And so that's great. Like that gives you a direction. It gives you something to plan and plan around and, you know, give you an overall strategy for your game. But on top of that is it gives you something during the game, which is like so cool. Like, yeah, you can get the cauldrons. You can get there's 4 different types of buildings that do different things. But like, if you want to go heavy attack, you can get the ones that help you attack. And if you want to help defend, you get the cauldrons. If you want, you know, the more, you know, the what is it, the little pig scoring
prestige.
The prestige, you can do that. And then the last one is the fortifications, which you mentioned. I have not done this a lot. And I think next game I play, I would, because you can buy those tiles that give you a bunch of extra fortifications. Like, that's insane. I'm really curious about that strategy now. The last game we played, our buddy did it. And so he had like a massive wall. It was like,
he had no choice.
Yes, he didn't have no choice, but even in the cooperative game, but he didn't even have a bunch of blue buildings. I think in a competitive game, you could build a bunch of the blue buildings and then just load up on fortifications. I'm really curious of what that would look like. Because obviously you get so many points for having a tall wall. Like, does it have a max on the level of the amount of points you can score?
No,
just
really?
Goes up.
Yeah,
goes
the
up
only
by
thing
it's
limiting
or...
is the amount of tokens on the board. So there's a certain number of tokens in the game. Once that runs out, that's it. Like, you can't collect more. So that's your only limiter. But like, if he went 10 high, like he would get 5 points per layer.
Yeah, that's crazy. Plus, if you're getting the blue buildings, you know, there's probably a ton of double multipliers.
Oh, you're
going to
get some modifiers. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like you're multiplying it by another 5 or... I saw mine, it was 2 per level. So then if you're doing that and you put it in the right spot, then that's 50 and then 80 points. Like,
yep.
And then no wolves are coming in because the wall's too tall, you know? So I'm like, I don't know. It's an interesting strategy. I'd be willing to try it. Yep. I think it's really cool. So,
all right, what about... Are anything, well, before we move on, is there anything else that you want to gush about or you kind of...
No, that's good. Out?
Okay, good. There's a lot of great things to gush about. It's for what it is, like, this is a very good game.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is for a medium light game, there's a lot going on in here.
There is.
Which is really good. Is there anything you don't like? Anything you'd caution people on?
It is thinky. And you might get railroaded by the wolves a little bit. Like, just take that as a possibility. Like, sometimes there's not anything you do. Like, I would say also in like a 4-player game, I think it's possible for you to kind of get the short end of the stick or the short castle, because in a 4-player game, it going last in the drafting is terrible, but then if you're going last and then you might grab, you know, the prestige icon, and then somebody else might immediately take it because you've been going last and somebody is prepped for that. And so I could see a game where you kind of just get the short end of the stick and you don't get a lot of prestige. You can't get back on into first or second, and it's just the other side of the table drafting. And so you're kind of getting the bare bones stuff. I think you can still play a good game regardless, but I could see somebody getting a little gamed by a situation. So I'd just be wary of that as a possibility.
Sure.
This did not happen to me. I haven't played enough 4-player games in that scenario, but I just know it. I see it as a possibility. I could foreshadow or foresee something like that happening, where it just, you know, you just kind of get the short end of the stick on the tiles, and then you just can't really build what you wanted to. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it just kind of adjusts the strategy a little bit, where, like you're talking about, you do need to kind of dive into that prestige a little bit more early game, so that you can get that first player token. I mean, since you're going last, you are basically guaranteeing getting to go first the next round. So unless somebody takes it from you, because that mama pig can bounce through multiple people in one round. Like, if you're player two and claim the mama pig and I'm player four, I can still take it from you. I mean, that's the risk you take doing it early in the round. So,
sure, no. I'm saying when drafting tiles, you might not see ones that have the prestige on it because everybody want, like, there's a way that you're just not going to see a tile that you might want because you're drafting late.
And that's, I mean, that's possible. I mean, you're flipping out four random tiles. So there's that.
Or cauldrons, honestly, if you're trying to get some cauldrons.
Cauldrons do usually go really quick, almost always. And so the villagers are broken down into four different types of prestige, walls, attacking, and cauldrons. The cauldron villagers usually go pretty fast, especially with new players, because like that's what they're looking for.
Absolutely.
I wish, and I wonder if there is, I wish there was a way to give a little bit of a benefit to newer players on the competitive mode, because we had one particular game where we had two new players and two people who played a couple times. I smoked them, like, and not intentionally. Like, anybody who's played with me, like, I don't try to smoke new players because I'm just not interested in doing that. But it just kind of how it fell. And it's one of those games where, like, you can't keep up with everything that's going on with the other players, right?
You're just kind of playing a game.
Yeah. So I don't even know that's really a critique, just something I would like, and something to be aware of. Like, if you're playing with some experienced gamers versus newer gamers on the competitive side, maybe play a few cooperative rounds first so that they can kind of get the hang of it. Because once you get into it, like, it can get ugly. For sure.
I think a house really could do is they get two starting tiles instead of one.
They could,
like two villager tiles. That could be incredibly handy, and they could put it where they want on the second one. Yeah.
The only other thing, I don't even want to critique this, honestly. No, I'm not going to.
Then
I'm gonna create it as a positive with a little room to grow.
Negative to positive. I like it.
So the insert is so close to being great. Like, there's an insert in this game that with storing stuff, it's so close. Like all these shapes are in a curvature kind of way because you're building a castle in a circle. And so they've got these weird pieces, right? Well, they found a really cool way to handle that. And I think with a little bit more work, they'd have been able to fit all the other things in the box without like having to do a little bit of Tetris to make it work. Because I feel like every time I get to the end and I'm like, well, those pieces fit great. And I feel like I'm kind of shoving in the rest of it, but then I have all this room on top where we could have done a little bit better, with storing stuff. So it's not even really a critique. It's just like one of those things where I'm like, man, you were like 90% of the way there. Like, let's just finish this particular part of the project.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. It's just a small thing for me.
I don't know. It doesn't bother me. But yeah. No, I could see.
You haven't had to pack the game yet. So
I did. I helped you.
Yeah,
I wasn't complaining.
It's all good.
Whatever.
I don't really have
anything. Get out of here.
I don't have anything else. I'm done being
negative. Go build your own castle.
I have. Well, I'm working on a new castle, I guess.
That's right.
Yep. All right. So let's grade this thing and get out of here. You want to go first? Show me two.
You go first.
I'm going to give this game an 8.5.
Ooh.
I really
spicy.
Like this game. I love how easy entry it is for so many different people. And for a medium light game, this one takes the cake. Like, I think that it does. I'm trying to think of a medium light game that has grabbed me like this since Ticket to Ride. Like, there's a lot of good medium light games out there, and I'll play it and I'm like, yeah, that was really fun. But this is one of those that it's both easy entry and gives me a lot to think about. and I walk away still thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm really excited for the next time we play to try this instead. For a medium light game, that's really impressive. So for me, I'm going to give it an 8.5.
That's high. High praise.
You weren't expecting that.
I was not. I'm going to give it an 8.
Okay.
I thought, now that you gave it the 8.5, I thought about it, but I'm going to stick to what I thought. I think this is a great, yes, like family game, fantastic, like top tier. And I guess, what did I give Wingspan on it? What was that, a 10? Did I give it a 10?
I don't think you did.
I don't think I did.
No,
I think,
because
I gave it a 9.
Marvel Champions was the first 10 for you.
Okay. So I think I gave it like a 9 or an 8.5. I think this is, yeah. No, I think this is good. An eight is a solid number for this one for me. And I think overall, like, yes, there's so many decisions to be had. You get the player interaction. It's fast. It's quick. It's a great family game. You get so many different choices in this game and so many different paths to victory, so many different combinations. I do find, I think the reason I can't, I'm a little reluctant to give it anything really higher is I've played it a couple times, and I do feel like I'm kind of like, I am seeing, I mentioned like there's a lot of paths to victories, yes, but I am seeing a lot of like the same village tiles. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm kind of trying to do the same thing here. And so, yes, there's a ton of combos. I just think maybe an expansion with some more like stuff there would be helpful, because I do feel like, oh, like I had this building last time, I have it again, let me do something similar. I still have, that's a caveat, because I'm still having fun regardless in this game. But I do think, you know, some of these other games that we've discussed on this podcast give me a little bit more long-term, you know, depth there. And I think this has plenty of it, but I'm just thinking of, that's the one reason I wouldn't give it anything
higher
here.
That's an off the cuff.
Yeah.
See, that's so interesting you say that, because I think that's one of the things we haven't tapped into yet, even as much as we've played it already. There's another level to this game where you learn the players that you're playing with and how to counter their strategies.
Sure.
And that's one of the things I'm excited to try out.
Absolutely. No, I want to everybody to hear that claim and take it with a grain of salt with my own truth that's about to follow, is that I still think there's a ton to learn and have depth here. I just, not something that I'm going to absolutely want to play every single time. I think there's other games and I would get tired of it, but I do think this overall great game, 8. I think it's just top. It is a top tier family game. Like, absolutely. I would highly recommend this. I think it has everything that you want in a game, that it's fun. It's quick, especially in a family game. And there's just so many decisions. Like, I'm sitting there, the entire game, I was never like, I'm bored, I'm sitting here waiting for my turn. No. Individual turns are quick. Then on your turn, you're right, even but while your turn's happening, you're looking at all the tiles that you could draft from. You're like, okay, well, if he takes that one, then I'm going to do it this way. Or if I take, what am I covering on my turn? It doesn't matter what tile I take. I want to cover this up. So that you're always thinking about something. By the time your turn comes around, you play something, and then now you're thinking about your next turn, and the other players are going while you're trying to decide what you want to do. So I think there's just so much to think about in this game, and it's a beautiful design. It really is. It's a really beautiful design. I think they should be, congratulated on this design. I think this is fantastic. It's honestly one of my favorite games that we've reviewed, maybe this year. Like, this is really good. So I think it's an excellent game, and I think it's going to do well. I mean, was it released this year technically? So I think I'm really excited where this goes. I'm curious of what as the game goes on through the years of what this will be, and maybe we do get an expansion. That'd be cool. So I'm really excited. I don't think this one has had much traction just yet, but man, you need to try this game if you're listening, because I think it's amazing.
And we play some heavy games. Like, I mean, I don't want to be whatever about it. Like, this isn't just for people who like lighter games.
No.
If that has not been communicated yet.
It's got some meat to it. I mean, it has some meat to it. And so I think overall, it's hard to say this about a lot of games, is that this game is going to fit with a lot, like you can mesh groups, people that haven't played and people that have played. And as a gamer, I'm gonna make a wild statement here, and I want you to bear with me.
Oh,
is that as a gaming community, if we want people to join and play more games, we need more games like this game. We need games that are gonna bring the heavier gamer together along with somebody that hasn't really played a game before or has played like a couple little games. This is a great bridge, and we need a lot more games like this, in my opinion, that are good. I think there's a lot of games that claim to be in this area of expertise, but I don't find them fun, especially as I'm the gamer that is the more experienced player. And so I think this is a great game for that. This is, I guess, the classic gateway style game. You know,
it does feel that way, yeah.
But it's not just for those people. This is for everybody. I think this is a solid design, and this is for everybody. And I think, you know, I'm always looking to add games like this to my collection because I want to have fun while I'm playing games too. I don't want to just teach games that, you know, yeah, this is a good game, but you'll really enjoy it. I do that. I enjoy doing that for people, but I also want games that I also really enjoy that I know I can bring to the table with a new person. So I think this is, again, I've said it like 8 times. This is a top tier design. This is fantastic.
Well, and I want to say too, keep an eye out on this publisher because Wonderful World Board Games has made another banger as well that we're going to talk about here in a few weeks on the Two Top episode. And they like, I think they've got a few things going on that are going to be in this structure of easy to learn, but has some depth to them. And so I'm excited to see what all they do. And, they are smaller. So I would say definitely give them some support if you can. But no, I'm excited for where they're going to go for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't spend a lot of time on the game company or art or designers. Which, you know, I guess it sounds like this is kind of their more first, you know, games coming out here. And so I just think when you have this opportunity, especially as a game company that's starting, yeah, it looks like the designers are, this is like their first experience.
Not the one. So Anthony Perrone has been on several games. But yeah, the other one is their first design. So the publishers, you know, they're working their way into this hobby, and I like where they're headed.
Yeah, and they're really nice, and I think you got to meet them at Gen Con. So
great conversation. We've had a few follow up chats after that. Great people.
Yeah. So overall, I think this is, again, it's a great game. Highly recommend. I think the rating on it, honestly, I think is a little low on BGG, but you know, we'll see how it goes. It's new, so.
Yep. All right, well, we can keep saying that it's a great game over and over again, but I'm sure all of you want to move on with your day.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I really get it. I deleted my Reddit app today because I just couldn't take it anymore. So if you want to avoid all that, I'm cool with that. Check out our website at thegametailpodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametailpodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All those links are in the description as well. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for our cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chistlin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we sit down at the kids' table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
I still love the Three Little Pigs.
I'm glad that our discussion didn't taint your love of the Three Little Pigs.
And I was so confident that it was 12 tiles, but it's only 9.
No, I knew that. I knew it couldn't be right. You kept saying it, and I was like, I see what he's saying, but mathematically that just doesn't make sense.
It's all right. We will take a collective breath and admit our failure.
Oh, okay. Failure.